This discussion of St. Simeon the new theologian is very important for anyone who wishes to understand the theology of the Christian East. As Bishop Kalastos explains, Saints Simeon and Gregory Palamas represent a kind of a breath of fresh air, a kind of new life in Byzantine theology, which was in danger of becoming very, very static and unchanging during the same period that Western medieval theology was experiencing a kind of explosive development in light of the recovery of Aristotelian sources. So St. Simeon is a very important source for the development of Eastern spiritual theology. However, he is not strictly speaking a hesychast. In the history of the development of the Jesus Prayer, he articulates themes that become very important and are incorporated into the hesychastic theology of the 14th century, but he himself cannot be described as a practitioner of the Jesus Prayer, although, as we'll see, one of his very important visions of life occurs while he recites a prayer, a kind of monologistic prayer, analogous in some ways to the Jesus Prayer. This discussion by Bishop Kalastos begins with an introduction to Byzantine theology, in which he points out that one of the important themes that develops both during the hesychastic period and earlier is the carrying out, the exploration of what Athanasius meant in the second part of his famous statement, God became human that human beings might be deified. Here, Byzantine theology, Eastern theology, is looking at this question of deification. What does it mean for a human being to undergo theosis? How can we still be human and experience this transforming union with God, this experience of union with God that remakes us in a kind of a divine way? And as we will see, the tradition of Byzantine theology, which to some extent is articulated by St. Simeon, emphasizes in particular the icon or image of the transfiguration of Christ as holding something of the answer to this. The disciples who gaze upon Christ, who gaze upon the light which comes from the Christ who is seen to be divine, and who are themselves therefore enlightened and, in a sense, transfigured as well. He goes on, Kalastos goes on in this first introductory section to point out how particularly Simeon the new theologian and Gregory Palamas are exceptions to a rather more barren, what he calls, theology of repetition. And he mentions three features that characterize Byzantine theology of the medieval period, which is also to be found in St. Simeon, and that is an emphasis on the divine mystery, on direct personal experience, not merely on a kind of distant intellectual or propositional faith, but on a living, transforming experience of God, as we'll see in St. Simeon's case, an experience of God's indwelling, and a preference in this tradition for symbolism of light. In Dionysius the Areopagite, there is a strong use of both images of light and darkness, both of apophatic and of cataphatic imagery. But from this point onwards, and particularly in medieval Byzantine theology, the preponderant emphasis is on a spirituality of light. The more apophatic dimension, which in the West in the cloud of unknowing, and in other texts that emphasize the divine darkness, particularly in the later, the Carmelite tradition, St. John of the Cross, the idea of God in darkness will not be a prominent theme in the East. Instead, there will be a preponderance of emphasis on Christ transfigured on Mount Tabor, and even a description of Taboric light as something that happens to the one who is in union with Christ in the Eastern tradition, especially one who prays the Jesus Prayer. Although, bear in mind, St. Simeon is not especially an exponent of the specific practice of the Jesus Prayer per se. Then in section two, in the biography of St. Simeon, things particularly to note are the emphasis on a living personal experience of spiritual direction. St. Simeon is a powerful voice in favor of having a spiritual director, a spiritual father, or a spiritual mother, but someone to whom one commits oneself and to whom one is very significantly obedient. He's even willing to change his monastic community in order to be able to keep the same spiritual father. So having a spiritual director, having someone with whom you open your heart, is absolutely fundamental and basic to St. Simeon's spiritual theology. And later in life, he gets into trouble for introducing the cult, the veneration of a saint, of his own spiritual director, before the church had authorized this. Other characteristics of his life towards the end of this biographical section are this series of visions of divine light that we will look at, and also the fact, which Bishop Kallistos emphasizes, that St. Simeon, in the most creative periods of his life, is what you'd have to call an urban hesychast, someone who is experiencing union with God while at the same time serving as the religious superior of a very busy community. He is able to be faithful in prayer while at the same time able to be an administrator and a pastor. So he's a very interesting bridge figure. He is not a hermit in the sense of someone who is living in isolation, but rather someone who brings the spirituality and the theology of the interior life and even of solitude into the context of service of the broader Christian community. Now, the rest of this article is devoted to particular emphases in St. Simeon's theology, and I hope that this will encourage you to read the now very widely available collections of St. Simeon's poems and theological treatises. They're available both through Cistercian Studies and in the Paulus Press collections. And with the background of these emphases, I think both his poetry and his mystical texts will be very accessible. Bishop Kallistos emphasizes in this third section the importance for St. Simeon of an experience of the divine indwelling, that one is to have as a part of one's spiritual life a conscious personal awareness of Christ and the Spirit. And he emphasizes this in a poem which is quoted here. Do not say it's impossible to receive the Spirit. Do not say that it's impossible effectively for us to experience what the earliest saints experienced. Bishop Kallistos emphasizes as well that grace is as apparent among us and must be as apparent among us today as it once was for the early apostles, and the gifts of the Spirit, the gift of this transforming love, this powerful gift is given to us as well. And in section 4, and this is rather surprising in a canonized saint of the Eastern Church, or any canonized saint, one has in St. Simeon a very unusual statement in regard to this experience of the divine indwelling, that anyone who has not had a conscious awareness of this indwelling of the whole of God in the form of the Spirit, in the form of this vision of light, should not pretend to be able to exercise the ministry of confession and absolution. And if you have had this experience of the divine indwelling, even though you are not ordained, you may be permitted to absolve. So St. Simeon had what would be regarded as a very non-traditional, and in his own day some people called it a heretical view, of the fact that this experience of this divine indwelling, of this light, bestows as well the power to absolve sins, and that ordination in the absence of that experience is not sufficient in order to be able to absolve. Now, obviously, that theology has not been taken seriously in classical Eastern theology, but at the same time, St. Simeon has not been condemned as a heretic. And so one may conclude from this that there has always been a kind of a sub-theme within the tradition of the spiritual father, and perhaps also of the spiritual mother in the Christian East, that if they have had this experience of the divine indwelling, well, perhaps they also have the authority to be God's representatives in proclaiming that your sin have been forgiven. Again, that would not be officially stated, and certainly it would probably be condemned if it were articulated openly. But one has to admit that the starets, or spiritual father or mother, has played a very important role throughout the history of Eastern spiritual theology, both for the great good and in some cases for the damaging detriment of the tradition. One need only think of the last czar, Rasputin, who was regarded as a starets, as having had this, this, as it were, divine commission and prophetic ability, what an important and destructive role he played in damaging not just the political stability, but the life of the royal family in Russia. Well, back to St. Simeon. In number 5, there's an emphasis on a description of his experience of divine light, and please study this at your leisure. You'll notice that in many ways it is as if he is viewing a kind of metaphorical transfiguration and himself being transfigured. It says he himself, it was as if he had been turned into light and overwhelmed with tears and with expressible joy and exultation. He begins with the prayer, God be merciful to me, a sinner. And so if you drop down to Bishop Kalistos' commentary, one realizes that he experiences this gift of light as well as tears in both a penitent, mournful sense and also a sense of rejoicing at the great gift God gives of indwelling. He himself is transfigured, Bishop Kalistos notes, but does not lose his personal identity. He is truly himself when he is within the light. So he discovers who he truly is and what he truly is in this experience of God's light and love. Two other characteristics with which he concludes. Number six, first, sacramental theology and the body. The Eucharist is very important for Saint Simeon, and his sacramental prayer is very strongly influenced by the experience of receiving Holy Communion. He notices three points in this number six, that there is no specific reference to the Jesus prayer, although, as we'll see, there is an important text for the later tradition from Pseudo-Simeon. Certainly it is not written by Simeon himself, that describes a physical technique, a technique of a visualization to be used, or at least of a kind of an interior sense of what the Jesus prayer is doing, that is attributed for many centuries to Simeon, but which we now know is not by Simeon himself. He is not a theorist of the Jesus prayer and of the hesychastic tradition specifically, although he can be described as a hesychast in the sense that he seeks union through hesychia, through inward stillness. As the second point, he is both Christocentric and deeply sacramental, and here again is a very beautiful poem describing his experience of union with Christ and knowledge of God present in the body, God present within the physical reality that God has created. And that's a point that particularly is highlighted in this third section. There's a profound reverence for the body, a very different model than one sometimes finds in saints who are almost embarrassed to have bodies, for whom the body is primarily a source of sin or a source of temptation. Here it is a reflection of God's glorious love. And the final point is that, above all else, Saint Simeon is a composer of hymns and of poetry. He is a theologian who does mystical theology using the medium of hymnody and poetry above all. So that is strongly recommended to you. And again, there are quite a number of translations of his texts, especially of his poems, should you wish to study them.